empty promises I've given. Hollow heart beats in my chest, and every word of sterling silver stirred butterflies beneath your breast. Still untouched by ties of binding, go where the gold breeze blows. No ring of gold around your finger, no ring of brass run through my nose. Headlong for the wall now, honey, still coming up like a rose. Dead still in the garden, waiting for the reveille. The dawn is yet to dry the dew from off my Sunday clothes. Let me know, sun better rise up soon if it's ever gonna set on me. Hear the song she's singing, darkling, cheerful, fair, and free and fine. You're the one she softly whispers, my canary in the mine. Headlong for the wall now, honey, still coming up like a rose. Dead still in the garden, waiting for the reveille. The dawn is yet to dry the dew from off my Sunday clothes. That mean old sun better rise up soon if it's ever gonna set on me. Collect hard-tempered steel, bites at my ankles, soft cotton rule burns at my neck. Headlong for the wall now, honey, still coming up like a rose. Dead still in the garden, waiting for the reveille. And the dawn is yet to dry the dew from off my Sunday clothes. That mean old sun better rise up soon if it's ever gonna set on me. That mean old sun better rise up soon if it's ever gonna set on me.
Welcome in, all you hippies and all you cowboys, to our first episode back in a long while after Garrett's been running around on the road. We're glad to have him back. And today we got a very special guest here. We got Josh Kutchmer, the Motel Cowboy Show, Red Dirt Book.
That's right.
Writes for the New York Times, Rolling Stone. Had a big article dropped today about a certain Oklahoma band. We're going to ask him all about that. Welcome in for appearance number 3 on the Hippies and Cowboys podcast. Welcome in, Josh Kutchmer.
Yeah. Let's do this.
All right.
Dude,
you've had
anything in the news that interesting to anyone?
I don't know. Did anybody else get a bunch of text messages today about Turnpike and an album or something like that? Some article that you wrote that, you know, helped break the story.
All right, we'll just get into it. Okay, here's what happened this morning. That single, Mean Old Son, which they debuted last weekend, was going to drop this Friday.
Right.
Friday morning. And so this story had been in the works for a year. And, you know, when you're reporting stuff like this, you have to be really professional and respectful and also really quiet about it. So I kind of like to put myself out there, on social media, at least to a point, and but I couldn't mention this. So, you know, I was kind of amped and I had a whole plan for this whole week. But this morning, they, being Turnpike's team, were getting their own website ready for this same announcement. And, you know, sometimes you hit the wrong button and something just goes live. and I was on a plane from New York City to Denver, but I was on Wi-Fi, and the editor at Rolling Stone texted me, "Have you seen this?" My first reaction was, you know, panic, because, well, there goes the story I was going to break. They did it themselves, and reached out to their team and got told what I just said, that, you know, we were working on our own site, and it just went up. So I,
whoops.
at that point, you're like, at that point, you know, you get two choices. You can be upset, or you can understand that happens in journalism. And, you know, their team has a lot going on, and they have a lot to manage with this release. So,
right.
You know, it doesn't serve me at this point with this really good story in hand to do anything other than, you know, press forward. So I, you know, all I told them was, hey, we're going to go up with this today. And the Rolling Stone editor, Joe Hudak, who's amazing and has been the one responsible for all these articles I get to write for them, is sort of handling via text, because I'm only on airplane Wi-Fi, and he's just going, I think we should just go up right now. And I said, let's take an hour. And I said, I trust you to rewrite the top of the story to take out the part where we're breaking any news. And he went, okay. And so right about the time I touched down in Denver this morning, he hit the button, and it's been wild since. It has been an absolute, today has been more insane than the day when they announced they were coming back.
Wow.
The feedback from, you know, members of the band and their crew has been positive, but so the feedback from people on places that usually don't give positive feedback, like Facebook groups and Instagram and Twitter, has been universally positive. And so there are many, many, many reasons to write stories and tell stories. And sometimes the reasons are not glamorous, but the Turnpike Troubadours story right now is a comeback. And there were a lot of things I thought people needed to know, and to have it be received the way it was today, I'm really, really, really happy with it. There'll be time later on that some artist somewhere that I cross paths with will be a story to write that isn't this sort of, you know, perfect ending to a situation that wasn't always perfect. And I hope that I can rise to that moment too, but that's what this was. And I'm really excited that it's out in the world, and I wouldn't have scripted it this way, because my plans got all thrown off, but I'm super happy about it. Today's been a great day.
And for those that haven't read the article yet, this is not an article that's just breaking the news that Turnpike is coming out with an album. Okay. The article goes well above and beyond. You spent a year of time putting this together, working with members of the band. There's a lot that goes into it, and you took the time. It's a beautifully written, we're going to get into everything that's in it on this, and I'm sure and more, but even after that, I mean, if you're a fan of Turnpike, you're going to love this episode. But I still recommend going and reading this article. It's so well written. The storyline of it is perfect. And you get into details of everything, the history of Turnpike, and you just, for any fan of Turnpike, it's very informative and so well written. So I thought it was just really cool. It's not just an article that says, hey, there's an album coming out. Like, yay, let's celebrate. Like, you go a lot deeper than that.
I thought once, I mean, you've seen them, you saw them here. The reason I'm in Denver is Bullet Red Rocks, and that venue was where their big comeback shows were last year. They had the build-up shows at Kane's, but the sort of the crescendo was Red Rocks, and you were there, and you saw not just how happy the people were, but how happy they were and the way they interacted. Mm-hmm. And so I thought there were two key points that needed to be made One was that we were all wrong, myself included. And some of the stuff I've written about Turnpike even alluded to this. Mm-hmm. When we thought their 2019 hiatus break was semi-scripted almost, the narrative was, let's let Evan take care of himself and get sober and they'll be back out there. That's what we all thought. I think when I wrote the Red Dirt book, I think I probably thought that too. That wasn't the case. Evan was done with music. He was trying to walk away from music forever. That's heavy. You know, for an artist who's brought joy to, I think, a great deal of fans of Americana music, to be in a place where he's that unhappy with doing that, I thought was very jarring. That was one. I wanted to make sure that shined through. And once Evan said I was done with music, it shined through. So that's the intense part. But I think the other part of it that is equally important is what makes Turnpike work now. And what makes Turnpike work now is that Evan Felker is a cowboy, a husband, and a father. And every now and then, 40-ish dates a year, he gets in his truck and he either drives to the airport or he drives to a venue and he headlines this band that is so tight and so built around him. And he's happy and he's engaged. And all of that is because of where he's at in life now. And I thought that it was really important for people to see what that life was like. And that life is this ranch in progress he has in Oklahoma.
Yeah, dude, that's so cool. He's pulling the Coulter wall, man. He's built a ranch, got cattle. He's living it. And I think, that's his life. And then he still just does the music now because it makes him happy is what it sounds like, which is cool.
Yeah. And he's super happy about that. And the entire band sort of feels that on this album, this Cat in the Rain album. There's one thing about it. If you'd managed to be lucky enough to go into a coma in 2017 and then suddenly just woke up today and you heard that album, you go, that's a good Turnpike album. And you think it was just the next thing. Then you have all the context of everything he's been through personally and with the band. And you realize that this entire album is about that and how he's moving forward from it. Then it suddenly becomes really heavy. And I think you're going to hear it compared to Southeastern a lot by Jason Isbell and probably In These Silent Days by Brandi Carlile a ton. But I think what both of those albums had was songwriter that had stories to tell and then a band that coalesced around those lyrics. That's what Turnpike did here. Right. And everybody to a person admits that. Most of them said so in the story, but even stuff that got cut out of the story, every band member basically said Evan had something to say. We weren't going to step on his toes. So, you know, Ryan Engelman didn't show off on the guitar like he could. Kyle Nix didn't show off on the fiddle like he could. And everybody came into that studio with sort of an understanding that that's what they wanted to do. I think that's what art is. It really is. If art is an expression of where you are in this place and time, that's what Evan did. And then the band realizing it and creating this sound that reflects that. It's really beautiful. And I think people, when they hear it in August, are going to kind of be blown away.
Well,
they should be.
Me personally, so my favorite, not just Turnpike song, but one of my, I have a hard time saying it's not my favorite song of all time, is Paint Over Rent. And that is a songwriting-centered song. It's not the classic Turnpike song that's going to have Nixie blowing a fiddle solo that's going to knock your socks off. I feel like from what you described in the article, what you're describing here, it's like more centered around Evan's songwriting and something, you know, real. Like that was Paint Over Rent, that's a real song that was going on, and the story behind it's super cool. But I think it's cool that you see here that one of the songs on the album was written by John Fulbright. It's like a full circle kind of moment there.
But think about where Paint Over Rent came from. I mean, that's the funeral of a family member. and you want to say something that has impact that nobody else is going to say. And that's exactly, I think, where his head was at. So it didn't make the article, but I asked Evan about some of this. And there were points that he said writing this song felt like when I was writing Diamonds and Gasoline or whatever. Only now I'm doing it with a clear head, which I thought was fascinating. So when you get into the album, and I want to, you guys have heard Mean Old Sun, right? I mean, you had to have. I think one of you guys went to like a country club when it stripped on TouchTunes.
Yeah. When I heard it, it had prematurely leaked on TouchTunes. I didn't think there was a TouchTunes in my town, honestly. But my girlfriend,
TouchTunes in town.
she, you know, got on her TouchTunes app, and she's like, the golf course country club has one. So we drove out there. It was pouring down rain. We were the only people there. Outside of the high school kid bartending and his parents were in there drinking. And I was like, TouchTunes, we need it now. So
everybody shut plugged up.
In. He plugged it in for me and we sat there and drank a beer and listened to Mean Old Sun.
That is the batshit insane Turnpike fandom that I think has resulted in them playing arenas. Like everybody
likes Turnpike. Are you calling me batshit crazy here or what?
Yeah.
I am calling you batshit crazy. How about this? I'm gonna hit some high points on the album, but I want you guys to tell me what you thought of Mean Old Sun after that.
All right.
So, Mean Old Sun is the first track on the album. There are six Felker originals on there. One of them is Mean Old Sun. The second track is called Brought Me. It is a 2/4 tempo song that certainly can be danced to, but if you listen to the lyrics and you listen to his vocals, that's going to be, I can't speak for him. That's his version of Cover Me Up. When you hear, when you hear the way he sings in that song, the chorus ends with, him stating that I'll never forget the one that brought me to this dance, but his vocals, you can just hear he's right on the edge of his own range. He's putting everything he has into it. Like he is singing with just this intent, like he's almost possessed. And when you hear that, you hear all, you hear what the band means when they're saying they're letting him have his moment. There's another just beautiful song that he wrote called The Rut. When you listen to this song, right? When you listen to this song, there's this whole metaphor that ends with, I came back to these mountains and they're all still standing here. Like that's a great picture to paint. And when you think about what he's been through, with Turnpike and personally, and the places he's been in the last 4 years, like that just hits you right over the head. That's also the song that I said in the article. That's where the line, I don't miss the taste of liquor or anything about it, but the temporary shelter was a welcome compromise.
Oh, yeah.
And if you've ever thought about not drinking, you have that thought. Like, even if you're just half serious about it, and this isn't, we don't have to go down the alcoholism wormhole, but if you've ever thought about not drinking, the first reason you don't is because that temporary refuge is really nice. And the way you just put it into those words blew me away. And I think, is there a long, hot summer day on the album? It's hard for me to say. I do think there are four or five songs that people will sing back to him. The two songs on the album that are Turnpike originals, but that Felker didn't write, Fulbright's Three More Days is just lovely. And actually both of the songs, Three More Days by Fulbright and RC Edwards and a guy named Lance Rourke, who you guys need to look up.
I got that vibe after reading this that I need to Google him.
He is worth checking out his new album that he just put out. He's worth Lance, come on the podcast. Lance, you're a hippie. You're a cowboy. Get your ass on the podcast. I know you're out there. Both of those songs, if you weren't told that Evan didn't write them, you'd think Evan wrote them. So I mean, everything just works. Mm-hmm. And I think that's true of the single too. What did you guys think of Mean Old Son? I want to hear your thoughts, because I have some. I have a lot.
So, I mean, granted, our listen to it was in a Touch Tunes country club bar, but it starts off with that banjo, and I'm thinking immediately, I'm like, is this like a Gin and Smoking Lies vibe? Because when you first, the first notes you hear of new Turnpike song, first single off the new album, first one in 6 years, you're trying to figure out what's the tone of the album going to be, you know, like, what's it going to be like?
Yeah.
It's going to be like what we've heard. Is it going to be different? So I'm trying to figure that out. And I'm like, so you're hearing that and kind of just like the instrumentation of it as it develops. Like it takes a while before you hear Nixie come in with the fiddle, and that's whatever, you know, some songs like Bird Hunter, you get a big Nixie solo coming in, or Kansas City Southern, you know, like you're waiting for that iconic Kyle Nix, and it kind of slowly comes into it, but then you get some Nix vibes. It's like, all right, we're listening to Turnpike again, like this is actually happening, Turnpike song, and we get some pedal steel in there, and then like the full band just kind of comes together throughout. And I thought that was a cool progression, because it kind of went from that, you know, Gin Smoking Lies feel to like traditional Turnpike, and then you get into the songwriting of it, and he's telling a deep story as well. Like you get every aspect of Turnpike, and then I think it still does set the tone for the album with how, you know, it is still centered around the story, and Evan's songwriting. But I don't know.
I think that's a great way to put it. Go ahead.
Noticed Sweet. Immediately how you could tell that Shooter Jennings had something to do with it, just by the way it's kind of like got like that ominous kind of sound to it. And I thought it was a perfect first single, given just the mystery of, you know, what this album, like, say, I mean, we haven't had new Turnpike in, what is it now, 5 years? And it's like, there is kind of like an ominous mystery to it all. And I thought that that first single was just perfect, like the sound of it and the, you know, kind of the way, like he said, it just builds up slowly, and it's kind of makes you wait, just as they've been doing for the last however long.
I really feel, you guys
definitely,
feel
you definitely hear like Shooter's hand in it, I think.
Yeah.
You might feel differently, but I really think that for a good long while, if Dave Cobb produced an album, you knew it was Dave Cobb. And I know that Dave sort of handed that baton to Shooter.
Yeah.
But when you hear a Shooter album, you know it's a Shooter album. But he's not out there like putting a stamp on it. It's just him.
Right.
It's just him being Shooter. So this part made the Rolling Stone article, and it's a great part. It's worth the Shooter Jennings portion of the article is worth it by itself, just to hear him waxing poetic. And I really hope one day that I can like somehow the entire half hour interview make it public somewhere, because Shooter has produced some of the biggest albums in Americana music lately. And actually in all of music, he's produced Marilyn Manson too. Won Grammys with Tanya Tucker, and the Brandi Carlile stuff is all him. To hear the way he talked, the genuine like giddiness in his voice for this album, that says something to me. And so that intro, I don't know what you heard on Touch Tunes, but by the time this comes out, you'll all have heard it. It's the banjo, and it's their background intros that Shooter ran through a Leslie keyboard amplifier. So there was nothing that was digital about it. It was all analog. And he was trying to set that tone. And Shooter said in the article, he said, the first thing I did was I had to play it for Evan, and Evan went, I love it. And that's when Shooter said, this is going to be really fun. But I think Shooter very much recognizes what his artists are trying to say. And I think when he got to that studio, they started out in Fame Studios and Muscle Shoals too. When he got to that studio, Shooter says the first few days were kind of like therapy or camp, because it was just all about getting Evan comfortable playing again. I think that made an impression on Shooter. I really do. Because he never lets that mood in any of the songs, no matter what the tempo, no matter if it's three-quarter time or what, he never lets the album stray from that. And I think between the band's approach and Shooter's approach, it's just perfect.
Yeah, that's That's well said. I'm curious. So, but before this, you were kind of talking about some of you mentioned like the haunting sounds, yeah, like the haunting sounds of the banjo, the haunting, yeah, harmonies. That's kind of like the harmonies in this being a little bit haunting, or that's new for Turnpike too. What did you think about?
So that? I asked about that. This didn't make the article either. This is exclusive to the podcast. We are breaking more news here. Okay. So something new about Turnpike in the last year has been these arena shows, right?
Right. So
I don't know the ins and outs of audio production, but I do know that by default, arena shows sound like shit. They do. You have to overcome that. You have to set them up a very specific way. So when Turnpike started playing these shows, everybody in the band realized that they couldn't just go out there and put on a Kane's Ballroom show, because sound travels differently in arenas. Mm-hmm. So what they did was they slowed their tempo down on just about every song, even the old ones. And what Gabe Pearson, the drummer, told me when I asked him about this album, the entire album is that. Everything in the album, yeah, the tempo is slowed down. Not necessarily to be slower, but to give Turnpike something to play in arenas. If these songs are going to largely be heard to those types of audiences and not, the Mercury Lounge, well, let's start out that way. That was their thinking. And then Hank added a little bit that I thought was kind of neat when he said, this didn't make the article. Hank said to me, we are a mysterious band. We don't go out on stage. Yeah, right. I mean, even beyond the public shit, we don't go out on stage and do a ton of interacting. There's not a whole lot of back and forth. We go out there and play, and we do lots of music, but there's not a whole lot of storytelling and introductions. And what Hank said to me was, that's who we are. We're like that. That's what we're like with each other. So there's this mystery with each other. Why shouldn't there be mystery in our music? I thought that is wildly philosophical and also 100% on point.
Yeah. And like, that's not new in the songwriting of their songs too. Like the characters and everything always kind of gives you something to think about. And at least in Evan's writing, you know, it's like, who's Lori actually supposed to be, you know, all that.
Right.
And then,
yes.
And that's something that caught my eye in your article was the characters. No Lori.
There is no Lori. There is.
Wow.
There is a song. There's a song title. You know what? You guys are going to read it. There's a song called Lucille that it's just lovely. It's a very swampy, one of those songs that, you know, Kyle Nix is involved in the way it sounds. But it's a story that's a whole lot like these Lori stories, but the name is Lucille. And, I hope that one takes off too, because there's a ton of mystery to that. Especially when you hear the song and you realize how easy it would have been to just say the name Lori.
Right. I wonder, do you think it's like they played that card out too much? Like everybody's expecting Lori, like maybe switch it up? Or, I wonder.
Look, it would absolutely not surprise me. I think everybody can figure out that Evan's a self-critic. He's pretty hard on his own writing. It could very much just have been, this could be easily a case of Evan just going, yeah, it's time for something new. just kind of wondering to zig when you're supposed to zag. And hey, man, you're going to put an album like this out, you've earned the right to do that, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Dude, another thing that kind of caught me from what you were writing was, like, Evan, so, like, he seemed not fast to talk about music, like, when you were down on the ranch, right?
Like, yes.
Like, he was very standoffish, but then kind of came out of his bubble as he started talking about other things. You know, started talking about the ranch and all that.
Like, I don't know how to really paint this picture, except that Evan has a big ranch in Oklahoma and near where he's from, and he's trying to build it into a full-fledged cattle operation, and he already has some out there. Mm-hmm. So in a vacuum, if you weren't fronting the biggest band in Americana music right now, you could just do that. He wakes up before the sunrise and goes inside when it sets. You could do all that. Then you put songwriting on top of it. I wouldn't say that. I think it's an overstatement to say he's been too distracted from it. I think the ranch has been a welcome distraction. Yeah. And he said himself to me, and it made the article. He says, if you don't give me a deadline, I won't do it. It's just that I have a lot more going on now than I ever did. So songwriting is harder. But I think that also probably has helped him focus, especially since he's writing sober.
Yeah.
We had a good long chat about the music, but I just thought that the rest of his life was a little more pertinent. Some things that I asked that I just wanted to know. I asked him what he ever saw in Long Hot Summer Day in the first place. Because if you've ever heard that from John Hartford, it's like almost a clogging song or a yodeling song.
Yeah.
Because I heard that and I just wanted to do something with the harmonica. And that's what turned it into, you know, that stomping set closure you hear. He said, he told me that most of his songs he finished in the studio, or even wrote in the studio themselves. He did say a story that the thing that got cut out, he did tell me that there's a song called Bottoms Up, which has a great lyric. It's literally about fucking around in the Southeast Oklahoma river bottoms. He said, that one's the one that has a line that says, your daddy has gone to Kingston betting on the rooster fights, which
how
could a guy that writes that and Mean Old Son be the same person? But he told me that he's had that one in the can for a little bit, and that also he didn't realize it at the time when he was writing about one of his high school buddies. So I thought that was kind of neat.
Yeah.
That'd be fun, quite a long time.
Yeah.
And it's not listed under Turnpike Troubadour. I was just searching, listed under Evan Felker. It's on like a compilation album.
I think you're right. I think that was the only song he had before this.
That song's been out for a while.
Yeah. But that's something I always appreciate in his songwriting. In his songwriting too, though, is like, you know, like songs like Shreveport, you can tell it's just like, so some a lot of stories about like him and his buddies just shooting the shit and kicking around, you know. Like,
and you can also like write City Oklahoma is Southeast Oklahoma and Shreveport's the closest city. Okemo, Oklahoma, where his family's from, that's East Central Oklahoma. And it's really inescapable. The stuff he sings about paints pictures of those two places for me. And I'm from that same part of Oklahoma, and that's probably why his lyrics have always hit me a little personally, is because you hear guys sing about where you're from, and like, but he's doing it in such a way where he's painting these pictures.
Right.
And that's heavy on this album.
Yeah. I mean, I went to Tahlequah to RC's house a couple of years back, and I felt like I'd already been there.
Yep.
That's
true. That's very true.
Speaking of like songwriting and songwriting about Oklahoma and painting a picture, I want to get back to that John Fulbright thing. And I have a question for you. You might not be able to answer it or like know the answer, but remember when Turnpike did that Paste studio sessions where they did like Pay No Rent and a couple other songs?
Yeah.
So Evan had mentioned, like, we know Fulbright's been like involved in the band for a while, you know, like, he's always around. In that though, Evan mentioned like Fulbright was trying to get back into the band, and then now we see Fulbright writing a song. Do you know, is there any like promise to that? Because he's one of my favorite songs. I've loved John Fulbright.
Okay, so I don't think you'll ever see the makeup of Turnpike change. However, I do think this current incarnation, you're going to see a lot of songwriting overlap with Lance Rourke,
like
with John Fulbright. Way back when, there was a time that Fulbright, I mean, according to Turnpike, was a member of the band, but it didn't last very long. He went off and did his own thing. But I do think there's going to be a little bit of a difference now. I think you're going to see, I think they have really settled into Oklahoma being home. Evan, you know, now lives near-ish to Fulbright. RC mm-hmm. lives in the same town as Lance Rourke. And mm-hmm. the way, especially RC and Hank have gotten really heavily involved in the Tulsa music scene. I think you're going to see a lot more songwriter overlap with those areas, which I think also means I think Fulbright's going to be welcome anytime.
Yeah, it'd be so cool to like hear him even like on one song, like in a recording, like that mashup. I've been dying for it ever since he said that in that interview. I've been dying for some kind of mashup, dude. If they can do a collaborative song and recording with Dropkick Murphys, yeah. I want one with Fulbright. Yes. All right, you know. I mean, I know we're just lucky to have Turnpike back, but I might be getting greedy, but I mean that came out of left field. I think, like, for a lot of people,
it did come out of left field. you know why that happened? Because fuck it, I'll tell you. This was another part of our interview. This is just all the uncut shit from this interview with Felker. he met Ken Casey. Because King Casey is also sober. They met uh-huh. through sobriety, wow. the Dropkick front man. And they kind of hit it off. And according to Stacy, his wife, Evan, like walks around the house with Dropkick shirts on and playing Dropkick songs. And that's really adorable. But when Dropkick did this Woody Guthrie project, they didn't realize that Evan was from Okemah. So mm-hmm. They called him, or I think called or text, whatever the communication is, and asked him to do it. And Evan, I'd be happy to. I'd love to. That's a great idea. He's like, Evan goes, Dropkick collab, sing Woody Guthrie, sign me up. And then they go,
yeah,
that's some bad news. I think you're going to have to go to Okemah, Oklahoma. And Evan's like, you mean like down the street? and that's when Dropkick figured out where they were from. And that's how that video came up. Dropkick at the top of the church studio and Evan in downtown Okemah.
That's funny.
That's so cool. I mean, I figured like the Woody Guthrie thing, the Okemah thing, I figured like that had something to do with it, but I didn't know that there's much more like to it other than that, you know? Like,
you know, there's a part of Felker especially is going to remain a mystery. So this is speculation for me, but I think you're going to find the collabs that he does will be with artists that carries some special meaning to him for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I just get that feeling, and I certainly think there's going to be more.
Yeah, and I thought, speaking of, I mean, we got to cap it off with the last time I saw you was at Dropkick Murphys and Turnpike on St. Patrick's Day in Boston, which was awesome. maybe a little too awesome.
That was the night that I got many, many sheets to the wind. But
there was some fireball involved, I believe, after the concert.
There was fireball. There was free wine. There was a whole thing. That was a fun one. That was a really good time, though. So those concerts, and the night you were there of the three was the three that I thought Turnpike was the least received.
I had people complaining. In my section, people are complaining. They're like, I thought this was supposed to be St. Patrick's Day music, Irish music. I'm like, shut up.
The first night, everything built up. It was Nikki Lane, then Turnpike, mm-hmm. and then Dropkick. And that was a good build up. It was also Thursday. Friday of St. Patrick's Day, the Rumjacks, they're hardcore punk band. And they're like the kind of punk band that's like, you know, fuck government, fuck whatever.
Yeah.
And they're loud about it. And so you had people that have been drinking on St. Patrick's Day in Boston all day, going to a Rumjack show in mosh pits. And then Turnpike comes out, you know, cowboy hats and fiddles. That was the night that everybody was just wildly puzzled.
There was a good number of Turnpike fans in there that knew exactly what was going on, though, and were puzzled.
I thought Turnpike's decision to lead off that show with Long Hot Summer Day was one of the coolest things I've seen a band do in years.
That was awesome.
But then Saturday, a really weird thing happened. First, Jesse Ahern opened, and if y'all haven't heard that guy and you want to hear some really good folk music that's not from the middle of the country, look him up. But he opened acoustic, and it was like the first night where you could build up. So you could build up Ahern, Turnpike, Dropkick, and everything. The tone was set so that nobody was really moshing until Dropkick.
Yeah.
But the difference on the last night was that was the day that all the Turnpike fans had flown in. That was the day that they crashed the ticket site and they all went. So the crowd was substantially, it wasn't the majority Turnpike, but it was substantially Turnpike.
Yeah.
So the people that weren't happy about it had kind of no choice but to shut up that night.
Nice.
And also,
I mean, I had no problem telling them shut up and listen. I didn't call them here for shit kicking music.
Actually, I was like, it's literally
on their t-shirt, motherfucker. It says shit kicking country music. Like,
it did.
Did you read the lineup? Like,
it was really cool. The first night, they'd just be seated out in the crowd in the theater style seating with people in front of us that were Dropkick fans. But when Turnpike started playing, you could see them on their phones looking them up. That was a really cool moment.
Nice.
I thought Turnpike did a lot of good for themselves that weekend. And another quote from Felker about that was, yeah, of course I get sober, and that's when we do Dropkick Murphy's St. Patrick's weekend in Boston. Like, it was hilarious. There's no way, you can't write that in that story that I wrote, but that was hilarious.
Right.
Like,
of that, all weekends to be sober.
If I'd been drinking like water, I'd done a full on spit take. It was really funny. And he was proud of himself for that one too. He laughed about it, and I thought it was cool.
Oh man. Trying to think where to go from here. I feel like we've covered so much. So much awesome stuff.
Well, I mean, we got a whole summer. Hype. Go ahead.
I said, was there anything else that sticks out that like didn't make the article that you were really hoping to get to?
I think, you know what? I posted this on social media, but this is a good tale to end on, because the story really did get into Evan's sobriety, and it's really worth the read. And it's very, I mean, if you're a human being, there is some really heavy stuff in there. When Evan talks about kind of the shitstorm that we were all causing and on media and social media. And I asked him, I said, were you aware this is going on? And he said, no, but, and I'm quoting here, I was so fucked up, it wouldn't have mattered. Man. So that's heavy, but that's also not the entirety of his story. Him reconciling with his wife, Stacy, they got married again. They have two kids now, and he's this happy parent and happy father. And like this adoring husband. I put an anecdote originally in the story, but it didn't fit with the tone. And it was sort of, when you read it, you had to kind of stop and then read this and then go back to the rest. So it didn't make the final cut, but I'll tell it here because it was pretty good. The first couple of hours I was there, we were actually in his house in this basement, which kind of looks like half unfinished, like someone just moved in there and threw all this shit in there, but also like has like a man cave in progress. There's a pool table down there. And he has this sink and this countertop that he was working on that sick calf with, filling up bottles and stuff. So he was fairly distracted. And also the subject matter was quite intense. And at one point you hear from upstairs, Stacy's up there with both kids, Evie's two, and Everett was just born last September, so not even one yet. So also, Evie and I have the same birthday, January 16th. Anyway, we're down there, and it's kind of serious, and all of a sudden you just hear this blood-curdling scream from upstairs, just, and it's clearly Evie, and she's clearly upset about something, and Evan tries to talk over it for a bit. I have the tape, and all of a sudden he's like, you know what, I should probably go check on that. So I turn the recorder off, and I follow him upstairs. I'm not going to sit in the basement. And he goes, what's going on up here? And Stacy, his wife, goes, well, Evie just discovered that we have cake, and she wants cake, but I told her it's 11:30 a.m. and she can't have cake. So that's where we're at. Evan just looks at her. This is a great husband and parent interaction. Evan looks at her and goes, oh, is that all? from the sound of it, I thought you were picking her up by her toes and swinging her around in a circle. And they both started laughing. And I thought that was just a delightful moment. And then he capped it off by turning to his two-year-old daughter and going, Evie, tell your mom it's okay to have cake sometimes. But that was a really cool story. And I think that people should know that that happened. It didn't fit into what I wrote, but it's a great encapsulation of another part of his life that nobody's ever going to see except when he writes it into a lyric.
And that's the thing is, like, Turnpike fans and anybody listening to this now, I'm sure everybody's huge Turnpike fans. And that's the thing. We said they're mysterious, right? We don't know much about them outside of the music. And like hearing just little things that make them human is like comforting in a way, you know?
Yeah. And I also think, that's exactly it. And I think that also undercuts, you know, any criticism. He's not the only artist to be sober now, but it's still a popular thing to be skeptical of the art when an artist gets sober. I think when you hear stories like that, you realize just exactly how human and how happy he is. And then you can hear it. Then you can experience his art through that context. Kind of makes you a dick if you pull the sobriety line then. Like, this is good art. You know where it's coming from when you hear little stories like that. So, I didn't want to pry too heavily into his life overall, but I did want to get enough of a picture that people understood that this is who he is now. And you can be wrong about anybody, but I think this is probably who he is forever.
Right. And I just have some final thoughts after talking with you the last couple of days, reading your writing and everything. Me as a Turnpike fan, it made me realize how lucky we are that this is even happening. It was done when, we were all as Turnpike fans optimistic that they would get back together, that he would sober up and everything would be sunshine and rainbows. But that wasn't the case at all. So that how fortunate we are that they're back together. And like, just thinking back to that first night at Red Rocks, like that, when that first note hit echoing through there, that was my first time there in general. That's no matter who's playing, that's going to be cool and meaningful. But when that first Turnpike note hit, that's like brings a tear to your eye kind of stuff.
It overwhelms you.
Just not,
that happened to me there too.
Just not knowing originally that they were getting back together, just they're back together and you hear it and it's in that setting. Like, that's overwhelming for me. It like put a tear in my eye, and that just hearing that they felt the same way. And like, it was just like, is so comforting and cool. And
hearing that they felt the same way and seeing how happy they are now.
Right.
And it's genuine happiness. You can't fake that. Was just so eye opening to me.
So August 25th just can't come fast enough.
Yeah,
that's right.
Well, thank you for joining us, Josh, and sharing all the great work that you've been doing. And
we got to cap it off. Appreciate the time. The new project you've been working on with the book.
Oh, yeah. Let's hear about that.
Okay, you mentioned Red Rocks. So I wrote Red Dirt in 2020, and if you haven't read that book, that's Oklahoma music history, at least the kind that we listen to. And there's a great origin story for Turnpike in there. I strongly suggest you go check it out if you haven't. You can search that anywhere on the internet. You can go to reddirtbook.com. The sequel to it is called The Motel Cowboy Show. That is that's a reference to a Reckless Kelly lyric, and it's a reference to Pinto Bennett, the great songwriter's band. And this is same deal as Red Dirt. It's just a lot of stories from artists who came out of the Mountain West. It centers around Reckless Kelly and Mickey and the Motor Cars, but there's so much more to it than that. All that music that filtered out of there and then went off in all sorts of directions, like Chris Ledoux, like Susie Boggess, like some of the artists that are making really good music in the desert Southwest now, the way that Jeff Crosby came out of there and sort of became almost, he lives in Austin now, but the way he barnstormed the Southwest for a bit, all those stories are in there and they're really good. And I think you'll all really like it. But if you just want to read it for Turnpike, we talked about Red Rocks, and I wrote about their first show back at Kane's Ballroom for Rolling Stone, but I said from the start, I'm going to Red Rocks and I'm going to write this too, but it's going in this book. So there's a big chapter in there that's a review of those two nights and captures the feelings you were talking about, just the overwhelming, like, you know, that release of emotion when they hit the Every Girl songs.
Dude, I went to Red Rocks twice. Yeah. The Blood Moon was crazy.
Yeah.
I went and saw them at the Ryman and obviously saw them in Boston. And every single time the first note they hit, I had that same wave of emotion. It was crazy.
Yeah, it hit you and it still does. So that's a whole chapter. I'm also going to go to several festivals up in the mountains this year. It's going to be released on the Thursday, August 10th. So that's the first day of the Braun Brothers reunion. That's fitting. But we'll spend some time at me and my books will spend some time at the Jackalope Festival in Oregon in June. We'll talk about it heavily there. That's a great lineup if you haven't seen that. And then
I know it's so fun. Back in
me and my books will come back to Steamboat at the Music Fest next winter and do a big production there too. And then we'll try and barnstorm Texas and Oklahoma again. I can't believe I wrote two books and now I'm talking like this. Me and my books will be all over there trying to do any readings we can, any interactions we can. And you can find that on social media at Motel Cowboy Show. Look it up. Or go to MotelCowboyShow.com and pre-order right now and you'll get it before the release date. And I don't know that you can spend 2 weeks reading the one chapter about Turnpike and Red Rocks, but I think it would be a nice, in my opinion, that's a really good read to get you amped up for an album release too.
Hell yeah.
Well, yeah.
All right, Josh, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for all the work that you do. Thank you for sharing it with us and with all of our listeners. And congratulations on another book, another stressful release of a Rolling Stone article today. Take a deep breath. You've done great.
Turn your phone off. Go have a beer.
I'm going to do all those. I'm going to get second night of Dropkick Murphys in Boston hammered tonight, and that's okay because somebody else will drive. Thank you guys for what you do too. You know, the world needs the world of this music needs you guys, and it needs this perspective. And everything works in concert, and this is a big part of it too. So I look forward to doing this again in a year and a half when we have a new reason to.
Let's do it, man.
Likewise.
Back in